All right, so thinking about your future legal careers, I bet you're already bumping up against some seriously complicated stuff, right? I mean, just one of those things, something that comes up all the time is how police use force.
Yeah, for sure.
And then right on top of that, we had this whole other concept called qualified immunity.
Right.
And today we're going deep on a case, Ayers v. Harrison,
Okay.
that just shines this super bright light on like both of these really tricky areas.
Absolutely. Ayers v. Harrison, it's not, just some random case in a textbook.
Right.
This case, it really shows us how the Fourth Amendment actually plays out, when law enforcement uses deadly force.
Right.
And especially in situations where things aren't totally clear, like did the officer properly identify themselves? Was there a real threat?
Right.
So our goal today is to like really break this case down piece by piece
Yeah.
and understand what it tells us about excessive force and qualified immunity, how these concepts actually work on the ground.
Okay, so let's set the scene.
Right.
We're in Georgia, September 1st, 2009.
Okay.
And we have this undercover narcotics officer, Billy Shane Harrison. He's on duty, but he's in plain clothes driving an unmarked car.
Got it.
And then he runs into Reverend Jonathan Ayers at a gas station.
Okay.
And what happens next, this is where things get really complicated.
Yeah, that's right. And what's super important right off the bat is how Harrison first makes contact with Ayers.
Right.
So he goes up to Ayers' car, and according to what the court found, Harrison pulls out his gun. Now, it's not exactly clear whether he was waving it around or like tapping it on the window.
Okay.
But the big thing here is Harrison never says, "Hey, I'm a police
Oh,
officer."
wow.
So just imagine yourself in Ayers' shoes for a second. Some random person in regular clothes suddenly has a gun pointed at your car and they're telling you to get out.
Yeah.
I mean, you probably think you're about to get robbed, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's terrifying.
It's a recipe for misunderstanding for sure.
Totally. I
Yeah.
mean, from Ayers' point of view, it makes perfect sense that he'd think this is a robbery, a threat to his safety. So
Exactly.
how does he react in this crazy situation?
Well, his reaction makes total sense given what he thought was happening. Believing he was in danger, Ayers puts his car in reverse. He's trying to get away from this threat.
Right.
And this is the moment where everything changes. As Ayers is backing up, Officer Harrison shoots, not once, but twice. And tragically, one of those bullets hits Reverend Ayers in the abdomen, and he died from that gunshot wound. It's a truly awful outcome from what started as this confusing, chaotic encounter.
Such a terrible, terrible tragedy. And like you'd expect, this whole thing ends up in court.
Yeah.
So can you kind of walk us through like the legal journey of this case, how it went through the courts?
Yeah, absolutely. So after this happened, Abigail Ayers, Jonathan's widow, she's the administrator of his estate, and she files a lawsuit. And it's under this really important federal law, 42 U.S.C. Section 1983. Now, think of Section 1983 as like a powerful tool, right?
Okay.
It lets people sue state and local officials when they believe their constitutional rights have been violated. And in this case, the heart of Mrs. Ayers' claim is that what Officer Harrison did, shooting Reverend Ayers, was excessive force,
Right.
which means it violated his Fourth Amendment rights. Those are the ones about unreasonable seizures.
Right.
So the case goes to the district court.
Yeah.
And here's something important. The judge actually denies Harrison's request for qualified immunity,
Okay.
saying there's enough evidence to believe what Harrison did was against clearly established law. Then the case goes to trial, and the jury takes Abigail Ayers' side. They agree that Harrison used excessive force. Then Harrison, he appeals to the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, but that court, they uphold the lower court's decision, both denying qualified immunity and agreeing with the jury's verdict.
So really, the whole thing comes down to two big legal questions, right?
Right.
First, should Officer Harrison have been protected by qualified immunity, meaning he's not liable? And second, did the jury have enough evidence to decide that shooting Ayers was excessive force given the situation? So what's the basic legal standard that courts use to figure these questions out?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Those are the key points. And the main legal framework we use to look at these questions comes from the Fourth Amendment,
Oh, yeah.
which protects against unreasonable searches and seizures.
Right.
But when we're talking about police using force, we interpret the Fourth Amendment through this idea of objective reasonableness. What that means is courts don't try to play Monday morning quarterback. They don't use hindsight.
Right.
Instead, they have to judge the officer's actions from the perspective of a reasonable officer right there in that moment,
Okay.
considering only what the officer knew at the time.
That makes sense. So when a court is trying to decide what's objectively reasonable, what are the things they look at?
Yeah.
I mean, Our sources mentioned a few key factors.
Yeah, there are a few well-established factors that courts consider.
Right.
Generally, they include, first, was there an immediate threat to the officers or anyone else around?
Okay.
Second, was the suspect fighting back against arrest or trying to run away?
Right.
Third, how serious was the crime the officer thought the suspect was committing?
Got it.
Fourth, did the officer give any warnings before using force? And fifth, was there probable cause, a reasonable belief based on actual facts that the suspect was armed and dangerous?
Okay, those are helpful.
These factors help us paint a complete picture of what happened as it happened.
Yeah, totally. So let's break down each of those factors.
Right.
And see how the 11th Circuit applied them to Ayers v. Harrison, to the actual facts of this case. What did the court find when they looked at each point?
So when the 11th Circuit really dug into these factors in Ayers, they made some important findings that supported their decision to uphold the denial of qualified immunity and stick with what the jury decided. The first big thing was they said there wasn't probable cause, meaning there wasn't a good enough reason based on specific, clear facts to think that Reverend Ayers was armed and dangerous when Harrison walked up to his car.
Wow, okay.
The second thing, and this is super important, Ayers wasn't running from someone he knew was a police officer. He was trying to get away from what he thought was a real and immediate threat. He thought he was about to be robbed.
Yeah.
And here, Harrison not identifying himself as a cop, that's huge.
Right.
The third thing the court found was that at the very moment Harrison shot his gun, Ayers was just backing up his car. He wasn't a threat to Harrison or anyone else at that point. And lastly, it's clear Harrison didn't give any warnings. He didn't even say he was a police officer in the first place.
It seems like him not identifying himself, that keeps coming up. Like, it's a really important point in how the court sees this whole thing.
Oh, absolutely.
So how did that, Harrison not saying he was law enforcement, how did that affect the court's analysis, especially when it comes to qualified immunity?
Yeah, that was a big deal in their decision. The court said that because Harrison didn't identify himself, it completely changed how Ayers would see the situation.
Right.
And therefore, it changed whether Harrison's actions were objectively reasonable.
Okay.
Because Ayers truly believed he was about to be a victim of a crime, him trying to escape, that can't be seen as resisting arrest or threatening a police officer.
Makes sense.
Now, about qualified immunity, the court said that there were already cases out there that made it clear. Shooting someone who's unarmed and not threatening is a violation of the Fourth Amendment. They specifically talked about cases like Gilmer v. City of Atlanta and Lundgren v. McDaniel. Those cases had already set that rule. The 11th Circuit basically said that what Harrison did was even worse than in those other cases, because not only did he shoot someone who was unarmed and backing away, but he did it without ever saying he was a police officer, without giving any kind of warning. So Ayers had no reason to think this was anything but an attack. So the right that was violated, that was already clearly established. And that meant qualified immunity couldn't protect Harrison from being held responsible.
Our sources also talk about how important the jury was in this case.
Yes.
So can you explain, like, what their role was, especially when it came to whether they believed Officer Harrison's testimony?
The jury's role was really central. They were the ones who had to figure out the facts. They listened to all the evidence. They watched how witnesses acted, including Officer Harrison, and they had to decide who they believed.
Right.
And in this case, it's clear they didn't buy Harrison's story. Courts usually give a lot of weight to what a jury decides about the facts, especially when there's evidence to back it up.
Right.
Unless there's just no evidence at all to support what they say, appeals courts don't like to overturn jury verdicts. And in this case, the court pointed out that other witnesses and the forensic evidence basically matched Ayers' version of what happened, which means the jury's decision was solid.
So for our listeners out there who are, you know, working their way through law school and all this complicated legal stuff, what are the big takeaways from Ayers v. Harrison?
Right.
Like, when we're thinking about excessive force and qualified immunity, what should we be paying attention to?
There are some really important lessons here. First, this case makes it crystal clear that police officers can't use deadly force against someone who's not an immediate threat to them or others, especially if that person is unarmed and trying to get away from what they think is a dangerous situation.
Right.
Second, it shows how crucial it is for officers to clearly say they're law enforcement, especially when they're not in uniform and are driving unmarked cars. Not doing that, it can completely change how someone sees the situation, and it can really hurt an officer's argument that their actions were reasonable.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And third, this case shows how important juries are in these kinds of cases. They're the ones who decide if the officer acted reasonably, and courts take their decisions seriously.
So when it comes to qualified immunity specifically, Ayers v. Harrison really shows us that it's not a get-out-of-jail-free card for cops, right?
Exactly. Qualified immunity won't protect an officer who breaks a law or a constitutional right that's already been clearly established. And like the court said here, the right not to be subjected to excessive force in this specific situation, that was already a clear rule when this happened.
Okay.
Whether there's probable cause to believe there's a real immediate threat, that's super important, even when things happen really fast. This case is a big reminder that trying to de-escalate a situation and clearly identifying yourself as law enforcement, those aren't just suggestions. They're critical factors in deciding if an officer's actions were reasonable and therefore if they're protected by qualified immunity. So for you future lawyers out there, remember, qualified immunity has its limits, especially when basic rights are clearly violated.
That's good to know. So for our listeners who might end up working on cases where someone's claiming excessive force, what does Ayers v. Harrison teach us about how to approach those cases? Like, what strategies should we be thinking about?
For those of you who might be litigating these types of cases down the road, Ayers v. Harrison shows how important it is to carefully examine the exact sequence of events that led to the use of force.
Okay.
You need to really focus on each step taken by both the officer and the person they interact with, and think critically about how that person would have reasonably perceived the situation based on what they knew at the time.
Right.
Pay close attention to whether the officer themselves might have made the situation seem more dangerous and whether the person they were interacting with had a genuine reason to fear for their life. These little details about the facts, they're often the most crucial elements in these cases, which are always complex and have really high stakes.
To sum it all up, the big lesson from Ayers v. Harrison is this. Police officers have a responsibility to clearly identify themselves, and there are limits on when they can use deadly force, especially when the person they're dealing with isn't an immediate threat, doesn't have a weapon, and is moving away from what they think is danger.
That's a really good summary of the key points. And for you, our listener, I want you to think about this. Imagine if Officer Harrison had simply said, "I'm a police officer," before he pulled his gun and started giving orders.
Right.
How do you think that one thing could have changed what happened? How might it have changed how Reverend Ayers understood the situation? And how might the whole chain of events have unfolded differently? It really shows how crucial an officer's first words and actions are when they interact with someone. And it shows how big the consequences can be, even for seemingly small choices.
Yeah, that's a really good point, and definitely something to think about as you keep learning about the law and how it works in the real world. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Ayers v. Harrison. We'll be back soon to analyze another important case.
Looking forward to it.